welcome to the Provider Podcast. I'm Adam Brimlow, Director of Communications at NHS Providers. Today, we're talking about the ethnicity pay gap in the NHS, the factors behind it, the consequences of neglecting it, and steps trusts are taking to tackle it. NHS Providers is committed to being an anti-racist organisation, and as part of its race equality programme, it's published a comprehensive guide in partnership with the leading healthcare law firm Hempsons to help trust leaders understand and tackle the ethnicity pay gap. It's called Counting the Cost, Understanding Your Ethnicity Pay Gap. There's advice on legal obligations and the changing legal framework, the importance of understanding the data, the role of boards, and strategies for closing the gap. In a moment, we'll hear from two of the key authors behind the report, Asmina Islam Chowdhury, Programme Development Manager on Race Equality for NHS Providers, and Saira Ramadan, who's a partner at Hempsons. But first, Diane Grayson, founder of the Hashtag Ethnicity Pay campaign and a non-exec director of the consultancy Spectral. I asked her what had prompted her to develop a campaign around this issue.
Well, it's lots of conversations that I was having with some people who I met on LinkedIn, actually. Basically, it was an article that said what's happened to the ethnicity pay gap campaign. And at that point, I had no clue it existed. So obviously read the article, got very irritated by what I was reading, and a conversation ensued, like, you know, why is that not an issue? Why are everybody talking about the gender pay gap but not the ethnicity pay gap? So I became frustrated, and through a period of maybe a couple of months, I was humming and ahhing, like, what can I do? So what I did was, the Me Too movement was around that time too. So I just thought, what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a campaign T-shirt, which I did, which was a hashtag of this pay gap campaign. And I shared that image, and suddenly everybody else wanted it. So I then started to produce the image. And through that time, I was also looking further into the ethnicity pay gap. And through that, I decided that I wanted to find out a bit more. So I did a bit of research. I started to write articles about it, and it naturally became a campaign. So it wasn't something I set out to do, but it naturally became that because of all the research I was doing, all the articles I was writing, and the people who I was connected with. So I then started to talk to like-minded people, for example, like Fawcett Society. So that's about gender pay. So they obviously know about pay. So I spoke to them and asked them, would they support? And they did. Thereafter, I got others to support, and the campaign started from there.
And so the ethnicity pay gap, how does it actually manifest?
Well, I always say it starts from the beginning. You enter the door of employment. So from the recruitment stages, as you go through your working life, you may recognise that you're not moving as quickly as others. So then there becomes the promotional barrier. So you'll see lots of people leapfrog you who do not look like you, and you're stagnated in an area where you don't want to be. Research that we conducted indicated that it was quite prevalent in the work spaces, because people were not being paid exactly what they should be being paid, and they were preventing from moving ahead and causing a dramatic challenge to them to be able to move forward. And moving forward to when you get to the latter part, the end, then you've got a ethnicity pension gap, which I have to be honest that when I was going through the campaign, you know, through years, I didn't actually think about it. It wasn't until I, again, read another article that mentioned it. And to me, it's quite logical, because obviously if you're starting from a challenging situation, you're not being promoted, at the end, you're obviously going to end up with less money than your white colleagues, potentially.
And so, given that situation, what have been the barriers that you identify in terms of overcoming the gap?
The barriers, I think, in recruitment are having the wrong people doing recruitment, or having people doing recruitment who unfortunately have biases, and there's no double check. They can do as they wish, and they hire that person. That person doesn't really know that they're getting paid less until probably a point in time. And also, policies and procedures go against Black, Asian, and other minoritized groups because they may need to do a lot more to prove that they are capable. So it causes the challenge. And, in terms of pension, obviously, if you get paid fairly right through your career, guaranteed your pension is going to look a bit better. So in terms of the barriers, the barrier is from the beginning. If we can break down those barriers, then pension will be what it should be.
Now, you've kindly made a contribution to a new guide that's been developed by NHS providers and HEMSons in relation to the ethnicity pay gap. What do you like about that guide? What's it got that's going to make it helpful?
What I liked it was is that they centered the guide and made it real focused on Black, Asian, other minoritized groups. So the people who are affected by the ethnicity pay gap, which I hadn't really seen before. People spoke about, the mechanics and not the people behind it. So I was very pleased to see that. Another thing I liked was the desegregation of data. It recognizes that data needs to be desegregated. You can't do just black and white, or black and Asian, or there are so many groups within each, so it has to be that way. So I think what the guide is not saying that you have to immediately do that, but that you need to start at a point where you can look at the data you have and then with time break down the data so it's more relevant and useful, because if you don't do the data in the correct way, it's not going to help anybody. Another thing I liked, it was the clear action plans for leadership, because everybody knows, if the leaders are not voicing that things need to change, nothing will change. So I was very pleased that they made a real effort to engage the leadership and give them suitable supports to be able to get them to do what they need to do. So I think that there's not going to be any excuses. There's no wiggle room here, because everything's been laid out and it's done in a way that is going to be easy for them to engage with.
Diane Grayson. So on now to the legal implications of a continuing ethnicity pay gap. Saira Ramadan is a partner at the legal firm Hempsons, which has partnered with NHS providers in publishing the new guide, Counting the Costs, Understanding Your Ethnicity Pay Gap. I asked her why it's important for trusts to tackle the gap.
Yeah, so that's a really good question. And I think there are several reasons that really play into this. And I think chief amongst them is probably the importance of promoting equality and fairness, because ultimately that's what the NHS is founded upon. And persistent pay gaps reflect structural inequalities that are contrary to the NHS's mission of inclusivity. So it really is imperative from that perspective. But there are other reasons as well. So, for example, improving workforce morale and retention. So by that, I mean that staff who are paid fairly and treated equally are much more likely both to stay in an organisation and, when they're in an organisation, to make positive contributions to it. And on the other hand, a pay gap can lend itself to demotivation and dissatisfaction amongst ethnic minority staff, which in turn leads to higher turnover rates. There are a number of other reasons as well. I think staff recruitment as well is a significant issue, because obviously the NHS relies heavily on its diverse workforce. And in committing to tackle the pay gap, what ends up happening is that NHS trusts attract talent from a wide variety of ethnic minority backgrounds. And in doing so, they demonstrate a commitment to equality and inclusivity in the process. I think another reason as well is around organisational reputation, which is obviously extremely important for NHS trusts and for the NHS as a whole, because tackling the EPG strengthens the trust's reputation and image as a fair and inclusive employer, and again is aligned to that commitment that I spoke about social justice, inclusivity and equality. And so trusts that fail to address their ethnicity pay gap are much more likely to be damaging their image and their reputation, which can obviously in turn affect public trust and staff relations. And then finally, I think my last point on why it's so imperative is that tackling the EPG is actually really instrumental in driving innovation and in ensuring good quality decision making, because diversity in the workforce, and particularly in leadership roles, brings a variety of perspectives that can enhance innovation and improve the quality of decision making. And so when ethnic minority staff are paid equally and treated well, they're much more likely to contribute to that decision making process and processes. And with that, they're bringing valuable insights to reflect the communities that they serve, which in turn is likely to lead to better service delivery and patient care.
So there's a whole host of practical and powerful operational reasons to act. But what in terms of the legal consequences? What happens then in terms of inaction on this issue?
Yeah, so there is a distinction between ethnicity pay gap reporting and gender pay gap reporting, because obviously gender pay gap reporting is mandatory in the NHS, whereas it's not currently mandatory with regards to ethnicity pay gap reporting. But there is growing public and political pressure for mandating the EPG reporting requirements. And I think the direction of travel indicates that that will eventually become part of legislation and will become a mandatory requirement in due course. So NHS trusts that don't proactively address their EPG now may find themselves in breach of any new legal requirements later down the line. But even in the absence of any mandatory EPG reporting requirements, there are certain legal avenues available to individuals who may find themselves the victims of an ethnicity pay gap under existing legislation. So obviously we have the Equality Act that deals with discrimination. So if there were an instance where an ethnic minority worker was paid less than they could demonstrate that they were paid less because of their race, this would give rise to a claim for direct race discrimination under the Equality Act. Similarly, if any policy or practice of any NHS trust disproportionately disadvantaged the pay of ethnic minority staff, that could lead to a claim for indirect race discrimination unless the trust could objectively justify that policy or practice. And then more generally, under the Equality Act as well, NHS trusts are subject to the public sector equality duty, which requires them to consider how their policies and decisions impact on equality, or how they impact equality for all protected groups, including those defined by race and ethnicity. So NHS employers must show that they're taking active steps to eliminate discrimination and to advance equality of opportunity. And any failure to do that could be viewed as a breach of this duty, leading to potential legal challenges, public scrutiny, and enforcement actions from regulatory bodies. And the regulatory perspective is an important one as well, because obviously trusts are subject to the Workforce Race Equality Standard, RES as it's commonly known, which mandates the collection of data on race equality across 9 workforce indicators, including pay and representation in senior roles. And so where trusts fail to tackle the ethnicity pay gap, they may receive poor ratings in their RES assessments, and that can trigger intervention by NHS England. And that could lead to compliance measures, reputational harm, and an increased oversight.
And when you look at the landscape of the persistent pay gap that we see, how important is leadership in terms of delivering practical, lasting change?
Yeah, that, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, my view is that leadership plays an absolutely crucial role in both reducing the gender and the ethnicity pay gaps. Because without strong and committed leadership, any efforts to address pay gaps are likely to be either ineffective or superficial or both. And that's for a number of reasons. First of all, the leadership team are the ones that are responsible for defining the strategic priorities of an organization. And so if the trust leaders aren't invested and don't specifically identify the ethnicity pay gap as one of their clear priorities, those pay gaps are unlikely to receive the focus that's necessary for substantial change. And it's also a matter of resource, because leadership have the power to allocate both financial and human resources to address any pay gaps. And so trust leaders need to be invested in the mission to ensure that those resources are allocated to the EPG and tackling it. In addition, I would add that leadership ensures accountability throughout the organization, making sure that HR managers and HR leaders are responsible for equitable hiring, promotion and pay setting practices, and that there's regular reporting on progress towards the closing the pay gap. And then finally, really, it's a matter of culture, in my view, because leaders shape and influence the culture of an organisation. So to effectively close the pay gap, leaders have to foster a culture that value EDI and pay parity, because that's really at the core of what they're trying to achieve.
Sarah Ramadan from Hempsons. So let's look a little more closely at that leadership challenge now with Asmina Islam Chowdhury from NHS Providers. Can trust leaders realistically tackle the ethnicity pay gap without addressing wider racism in the NHS?
Well, tackling the ethnicity pay gap has to be part of a wider strategic focus on anti-racism and is key to creating an inclusive workplace that prioritises the experience of its staff, and in turn it helps them, enables and empowers them to provide great patient care. The pay gap is a symptom of wider structural inequalities, and therefore we can't really address a symptomatic issue without addressing the root cause. It's like sticking a plaster over a crack without addressing the actual underlying issue of the crack itself. In that vein, I suppose, if we're to be truly anti-racist and inclusive, we need to consciously consider the impact of the policies, the practices on ethnic minority staff and communities, and indeed across all the protected characteristics at the start of our decision making and within the development of all policies and practices. And work to tackle the ethnicity pay gap cannot be isolated from work on inclusive recruitment, on talent management and wider organisational culture change.
So NHS Providers has done a report in conjunction with Hempsons looking at this issue. And one of the things that really comes through is some of the work that trusts are actually doing in this field to really make progress. What sorts of things are they doing?
We heard about some really exciting initiatives in our conversation with Barts Health, Berkshire Healthcare and Cambridge County Council. These included things like a future very senior manager programme for staff currently working at Agenda for Change bands 8 and 9. And within that programme, they require 50% of the cohort to be from an ethnic minority. Whilst that's very much focused at the upper end of the pay scale and the very senior colleagues, the Trust also has initiatives for staff at bands 5 to 7, which is where the vast majority of their ethnic minority workforce is concentrated, and this is alongside talent management frameworks to explore staff aspirations and support them in succession planning, have career development conversations and offer mentoring as well. That was from Barts. With Berkshire, we heard about their flagship Unity Against Racism programme, an anti-racism task force that prioritises the need to take an active role in identifying and addressing all types of racism and their impact. And that's across things like the career journey as well as the outcomes for the ethnic minority staff. And with Cambridgeshire County Council, we heard about the accountability frameworks they have, including communities, social mobility and an inclusion committee to act as an internal reference group and help assess their internal decision making. But across all of these, the commonality from the three organisations was the role of the board and senior leadership in driving this work, and that included the board's role in maintaining strategic oversight of the priorities, their role in overseeing the creation, the implementation and review of their policies and procedures, and using disaggregated data to inform all of this work, as well as the qualitative insights from their staff, and the need to embed accountability through robust governance systems and processes, with really specific and measurable actions for their board members. And the last thing that I wanted to pick up on that really struck me was the importance of personal accountability and the commitment to anti-racism from the leaders that we spoke to. That came through so strongly. The leaders we spoke to really spoke about doing the work themselves to understand the issues, the importance of allyship and their personal accountability to drive forward this work and change and improvement within their organisations for their staff.
So some really clear steps and lessons for trust in how to really make progress on this. This might seem like an odd question in some ways, Asmina, but really, how hard is this for trust to crack this problem?
This is long-term strategic work, and I think that's been part of the issue. We need to maintain an ongoing focus on this, and it's not a done thing that if you implement an intervention straight away that we'll see an outcome the following year. The leaders we spoke to very much talked about having a long-term strategic focus over a number of years to deliver the improvements. And in some places they've started to see improvements, but it's continuing on and not losing focus or hope or thinking that something isn't going to deliver change. But it's also about not being afraid to course correct if something is going in the wrong direction.
And just to be clear, Asmina, the consequences of inaction for staff, for patients, for the NHS.
So I suppose the wider consequences of inaction, it's going to impact trust leaders, both in terms of their role as an employer. It will impact staff and it will impact patients. As an employer, we know that persistent disparities are most likely result in ethnic minority staff seeking employment elsewhere, higher turnover rates, the associated disadvantages of this, including loss of talent, diversity and the costs. Reputationally, it's not where we want to be in an organisation, and it could deter future high quality candidates from coming in, as well as stakeholder relationships for those representing ethnic minority communities. For staff, alongside the decreased morale, the lower job satisfaction, the correlation between pay disparities and access to limited career development and progression, there's also a huge impact on staff well-being. The psychological impact of being undervalued can lead to increased stress and potential ill health. And we know there's also an economic impact of lower pay, and there is significant research that's proven that 80% of health outcomes are determined by non-health related factors, including employment as one of them and income. For patients, there's implications for quality of care and exacerbation of existing health inequalities, particularly where pay disparities could erode trust in the NHS, and that's key to building those relationships. And it could affect things like health seeking behaviours and exacerbation of existing inequalities.
Asmina Islam-Chowdhury there, Programme Development Manager for Race Equality at NHS Providers, rounding off this edition of the Provider Podcast. A reminder of that guidance again is called Counting the Costs, Understanding Your Ethnicity Pay Gap. A reminder as always that you can join in the conversation and subscribe to the podcast by following us on X, formerly known as Twitter, and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast. Thanks for listening.